Okay, I'm going to ask Kelly to give us a brief discussion on the purpose of the meeting. I'll make a couple of remarks. We'll ask the public for their comments, and then we're going to ask Kelly to do the more detailed presentation on a deeper dive on what's being discussed and requested here today. So, Kelly, can you give us the overview right at this point?
Actually, I will start with thanking you for all being available for this special meeting. I'm actually going to let Josh do a little summary of where we are and what we're looking for today, and then I can talk a little bit about kind of the history of the hardship requests that we've seen.
Okay.
Thanks, Kelly and Bill. Yes, so Representative Davis filed HB 3375 the week of the board meeting in March, I think a day or two before the board meeting. The board voted to oppose it because of its potentially disastrous effects, allowing the lump sum drop distributions. One of the items in the bill was to try to enable anybody to get a hardship rather than just retirees. When we met with Representative Davis, she indicated that is something that she really would like, that she had been contacted by a few surviving spouses and other people who had tried to get a hardship and couldn't, were told they couldn't do that. And I indicated to her that it was unfortunately something that I felt like the board's hands were tied. The statute was very clear. So we indicated to her that Kelly and I did that we would be willing to take to the board on an expedited basis a very narrow committee substitute to HB 3375 to allow anybody who is receiving a drop distribution to apply for a hardship. We think that that's likely what was intended. There's not 100% clarity about anything being intended or not intended in a statute, but it seems fairly clear that that was likely intended. It just got missed. And then Kelly can kind of walk through the numbers and why it's really not an effect. So we were just simply seeking the board's approval to allow Kelly the authority to acknowledge that the board is in favor of such legislation as long as the language came out was very narrow and just simply allowed the expansion of anybody receiving a drop annuity to apply for a hardship. So that's what we're here today, is for that very narrow focus of trying to get the board's approval to that concept.
Okay, thanks, Josh. I would just add very briefly that, you know, when the new board was constituted in 2017, we did take a very serious and hard look at the hardship requirements and felt very strongly that our duty was to protect the fund and not to allow hardships that weren't truly hardships, and we sort of conformed our thinking to rules that exist in ERISA and 401k and Department of Labor guidelines, that these hardships have got to be unforeseen, significant events that couldn't have been planned for. And Kelly will probably go through the policy in a little more detail, but we think it is important that we be sensitive to provide for true hardships, but at the same time not allow a lot of small things to become hardships that could have been foreseen, planned for, and taken care of through other means. And we probably will get to discuss some of that. But I thought we would do that. I'd let you know about that thinking, that process. And we are required to allow the public to comment before we get into our more detailed discussion. So, John, do you want to just give them the instructions? Is it star 5, I believe?
Yeah, it's actually a 5-star.
5-star. I'll get it right one of these days.
It's a little backwards from every other phone system. I'm not seeing anybody.
Okay. If we're not getting any comments, we'll close that window. And Kelly or Josh, who wants to now take us through the more detailed package?
I can go through it from here. So on page 3 of the materials that were sent out to you, you can see that the language changes that we're proposing here, and they really are very minor. It really is essentially just changing the word participant, drop participant, because a member can only a member can be a drop participant to any person. So this is the full extent of the changes in this, you know, 110-page section of the law. So that's what's being proposed here. And as Josh indicated, we felt like this was a good change to make if we can contain the changes to this section and these words. We are concerned that other sections of HB 3375, could be added, but we've made it very clear to the chair of the Pensions Committee and other people that that would not be acceptable. With these changes, Siegel has indicated, no surprise, that it wouldn't have an actuarial impact. And I will show you on the next page kind of the history of the hardship. So as Bill mentioned, the hardship policy is actually part of the drop policy, which is online. It is included here for your information. But really the board adopted some very specific guidelines on what constitutes a hardship, and we're not here today really to talk about what should and shouldn't be a hardship. The board can add that to the agenda at any time to consider that. But right now, basically, the hardships that we receive are in a variety of categories. One is damage to a home. We've seen some tornado damage and fire damage stuff. We've seen a lot of medical expenses for members, as well as their spouses and children that we've approved. We've seen funeral expenses, and we also have a category to look at other extraordinary unforeseeable circumstances, and people have submitted things in that category as well. So those are the general categories, those big things that you really don't plan for and you don't have other money to pay for. So I wanted to mention that. Yes.
This only applies to the beneficiaries of deceased members of the plan. Is that correct?
It would actually apply to the change would apply to anybody with a drop account. So that would include, you can leave your drop account to anybody. It doesn't have to be a surviving spouse. So you could leave it to a child. You could leave it to a friend. There's also alternate payees that have drop accounts. So the way that this is written is anybody with a drop account could request a hardship.
Okay. Thank you.
Sure. So over time, we've seen less and less requests for hardships, and some of that has to do with people don't want to provide the financial information that's required to get a hardship because the policy does require that they don't have other funds to cover the issue. So we have to look at bank statements, credit card bills, those types of things. And a lot of times when members inquire about the hardship process, they decide they don't want to provide that information and then don't go ahead and submit an application. So you can see on slide 4, that's just a quick chart that I put together today to let you know kind of what goes on in the hardship world. If you start at like 2021 on this chart, which is the last line, we haven't had any hardship requests this year so far in 2021. I did talk to our staff, and we have received 2 phone calls for people inquiring about what it takes to get a hardship, and both of those were from members. Both of them had to do with needing money to pay their tax bill, and neither one of them submitted an application. So we have nothing for 2021. Moving up the chart, in 2020, we received 3 applications. One of them never submitted the required paperwork, so that was closed out. And one of these hardships was approved for $12,736. That's the blue columns. And one was denied for $1,937. So that's all we received in 2020. In 2019, we received 3. We approved 2 and denied 1. 2018, we received 10 requests. 3, we didn't have complete paperwork. So of the 7 remaining, We approved three, we denied three, and then we partially approved one of them. And then after the new board was seated and the new law came into effect in 2017, we received 20. At that time, we didn't mark on the spreadsheet whether we received all the paperwork or not. They were just recorded as approved or denied or partially denied. So you can see the numbers were much bigger in the beginning when people were trying to really understand how this would work. So we did approve four at that time, denied 12. There was a lot of people just requesting hardships without providing adequate documentation at that time. So that is kind of a summary of where we are with the hardship requests that we've seen so far. And because these numbers are pretty small, you can see that adding the spouses and other people that hold drop accounts, we didn't feel would have an impact to the system. I mean, it would definitely or could definitely have an impact if we were to broaden the rules that the board established. Are there any questions about hardships? One of the things I should mention, too, for the newer board members is I have the ability to approve a hardship without taking it to the board, but I don't have the approval to deny a hardship. So anytime I'm recommending denial or partial denial, that becomes an agenda item for the board. So that way you can kind of monitor if you think our rules are fair or need to be adjusted, and that we're just not denying a whole bunch of hardships out there, which is one of the statements that was kind of said by the people supporting the bill down in Austin. It just isn't true. We're not, you know, randomly denying tons and tons of hardships.
And the definition,
are there any questions?
The hardship is on page 15 of the policy in section G for anybody who wanted to look at that. I don't know if you're planning on covering it anymore, Kelly.
I wasn't really, but the definition of the hardship really comes out of the statute. So it does start, as Bill said, on page 9 of 12 of the policy. It talks about what is a hardship. So it has to be, according to the statute, it has to be an unforeseen financial hardship. So it can't just merely be an emergency or and you can't have other funds to cover it. So, for example, I mentioned the tornado issue. We did have a member that lived out in Van Zandt County a couple years ago when that tornado hit there, and his house was damaged. A lot of his property was actually damaged. And we covered his expenses that weren't covered by insurance, but we didn't cover the full amount. And he had requested the full amount, even though he had insurance to cover it. So we make sure that it's not covered by something else, there's no other funds available, and it's a financial hardship that falls within the categories defined by the board.
Kelly, would you just remind us, if somebody passes away, does their spouse, does that considered a hardship, get into one lump sum?
Yes. So a member can request money for a hardship under the current rules from the board. A member can request hardship to pay funeral expenses for a parent, a child, a grandchild, or their spouse. It would also cover reasonable travel and housing costs for the retiree, their spouse, or child, their grandchild. So they can request funeral expenses. In addition to that, the estate of the retiree can request money to cover the retiree's funeral expenses and medical expenses at the end of their life if necessary. And that's the only instance right now where a spouse can request money is to pay for the actual member's funeral cost.
Okay. So to be clear, it's not as if a retiree passes and they have a drop balance that a lump sum goes to the spouse. It's that the spouse can pay expenses out of that drop account. Is that a correct statement?
A spouse can pay medical expenses or funeral expenses related to that retiree.
Okay. But no lump sum if that person passes away.
no lump sum, you know, in addition to the medical costs and funeral costs. So they can't take a lump sum amount for other reasons. But that annuity, whatever is left on it forever, the dollar amount the retiree was receiving for the term that the retiree had remaining in the annuity passes to the spouse. But there is no ability to ask for a lump sum outside of the funeral and the medical for the retiree.
Thank you.
Mm-hmm.
Hey, Kelly, it's Armando. I have a quick question on the approval process. You said that you make the approvals, and I'm assuming that by you mean you and a panel of other people within your office, or is it just strictly you that makes the approval, but the denials come through the board? I'm just trying to make sure that there's a level of consistency there, and I was just trying to clarify that.
Armando, thank you. So the process is a member or someone will call up and ask, how do I get a hardship? And those phone calls will go to Amy Cruz in our office to explain to the member, here's how the process works, here's what's eligible, here's the type of information that we'll be asking for you to determine whether the hardship can be granted or not. And then they have a little application. The application basically just says, I'm looking for medical expenses in this dollar amount and their name and address, that type of thing. There's not much on there. The hard part is we're asking for bank statements, credit card statements, investment information, that type of thing. So we end up getting, you know, a pretty large stack of information. Think about the stuff you might submit to apply for a mortgage, kind of looks like that. And I have, Amy then takes all of that information and provides it to an administrative clerk in our office. And the two of them together work through the stack of documents. They'll go through every line on the credit card statement and everything and try to really build out a balance sheet and an income statement to really determine, are there other funds available to pay for this hardship? And once they have looked at it together and they together make a recommendation, that recommendation comes to me and then I look at everything and determine, does it meet the criteria? Are there other funds available to meet this need? And then if I feel like it needs to be approved, I approve it and it gets paid. If I feel like for one reason or another, it doesn't meet the criteria or there's other money available, or the person isn't eligible to apply for hardships, such as we're talking about today, then that would go to the board. So it is a really tedious, detailed process, and a lot of times there's back and forth in, I need this information on your car loan or whatever, and you know, it's pretty intrusive, really, but when the board determined we need to make sure that they don't have other money available to pay for this, that's the level we have to go to determine that.
Okay. All right.
Do you report, to approve, Kelly? Kelly, do you report to the board if you do approve, just so we know what's going on?
That's a good question. I don't think I have. But I can certainly start doing that.
Yeah, I think that's a good practice, just so we're aware how many are coming in, et cetera, and monitoring that aspect.
Okay. And you know, I know that there's been some. One of the things that Representative Davis mentioned is she would like a shorter time frame on when we can commit that we will, you know, get an approval or denial back. And we do it as quickly as we can, but because of the amount of review, which typically results in follow-up questions, it's hard to give a specific guideline. We do say within 60 days, especially if it needs to go to a board. Sometimes it's hard to, you know, you might have just missed the board agenda. So we don't want to, in the statute, change anything related to that, but we do try to do them as quick as possible.
Kelly, how many days do you give the person to come up with the paperwork before you label it as having provided the information?
We don't really have a specific drop-dead date, but we do follow up with them with multiple emails and letters saying we're not moving forward with this until you give us specific information. I mean, I know one that they just closed out recently or sent them a letter saying they're going to, you know, consider it closed because they haven't heard back from them. That one was a request that was received in September, and we hadn't heard anything. So they give them a long time.
Okay.
Okay, is there anything else, Kelly, you want to add before, other than the recommendation to make a motion that's on page two?
The only thing is, you know, we are concerned a little bit that no other changes get into the bill with this change, because, you know, if this gets broadened or if any of the other changes that are in HB 3375 get back into the bill, obviously that wouldn't be good for us. So we will monitor this very closely with our legislative consultants. We know that the associations, the active associations, are also opposed to the original 3375 as well as the city. So I think we have a lot of eyes and ears on this to make sure we don't get an expansion of the language. But the reason that we've got the language in there that we have is sometimes when we get the bill back from legislative council, they might have tweaked some things, or maybe they have some direction to tweak some things, or there could be a floor amendment, and that's why we want to have some flexibility to adjust on the fly as we go, so we don't have to hurry and do another special meeting. But with the motion we have, we would hope the board would support this change and give us the flexibility to adjust to any minor adjustments that need be.
You were expecting to get back some legislative wording from legislative council today. Has that ever arrived back to you or not?
We haven't received it yet.
Okay.
And so, Kelly, just to be clear, this is not changing the definition at all or anything in that regard for what a hardship is. This is just allowing any holder of a drop annuity to be able to declare, apply for a hardship. That's all it is.
That's correct, Gilbert. Yes.
Okay.
I got two questions real quick, Kelly. One, when is the final? I'm guessing, what, April 30th is the final day for any kind of amendments to be brought forward? Any changes or not?
I'm not sure what the calendar is. Josh, do you know?
I don't know if there's a specific date, because the amendment could come at any time in the process. So I don't know that there's a specific date once it gets out of committee and out over to the full House. I'm not sure there's a specific date that amendment couldn't be made. Amendments can be made up to the last minute, I suppose, before bills are passed. So I don't think there's a specific date.
Yeah. Okay. This is Alan. I mean, there still could be a committee substitute, but once it gets out of committee, it could be amended on the floor. If it makes its way to the Senate, it could be amended there. You know, if there's a different version, there can be a reconciliation. So there's a lot of ways for it to get changed. But that's why I think, if we approve a motion that, the clear understanding is that it's the board is only okay with this narrow change and nothing that goes beyond that, so that members of the legislature understand that.
And I guess my last question is, this bill, even with the amendment, could just die in entirety and revert back to and just continue on the way it is now. Right? I mean, the amendments don't have to go forward, do they?
No, they don't have to go forward.
Okay.
So, I think our plan has all along been to fix this issue when the bill gets opened up in likely 2025, but we didn't want to open it up for this issue, because as Alan said, you know, things can get changed all along the way, and we didn't feel like it was worth opening this up and having, you know, something happen that is unintended. But since it's here now, and I think it's the right thing to do, we're recommending moving forward with it.
Okay. Is there any other discussion or questions before we entertain a motion? If not, would somebody want to motion the what was on here is the recommendation to authorize the executive director to express board approval solely for the legislative changes to Section 6.14E3, which allow all recipients of drop annuity accounts payments to apply for hardship distributions subject to approval by the general counsel of any proposed legislation.
Yeah,
this is Alan.
Don't move.
Okay,
Alan's second.
Who is the second?
Alan.
Okay, who moved it? I thought that was you, Alan, who moved it. I'm sorry.
No, this is Ken. I moved. I made
Ken.
The move.
Okay. Okay. We've got, I think we've got 9 of our 11 board members on. Is anybody opposed?
Yes, sir, Mr. Chairman, I'm opposed to it. Armando.
Okay. Please note that. Okay, so I think if we have 9 people here, 8-1, it would be approved. Do we need to do anything else, Kelly, to say that we don't support any other changes? Do we need to move on anything along those lines so that they know this is solely this very narrow version and we wouldn't be supportive of anything else?
I think the motion conveys that with the approval solely for the legislative changes that are here. I think the motion expresses that. We've expressed that to Representative Davis. We've also expressed that to Chairman Anchia, who's the chair of the pension committee. So everybody knows that we are okay with this language and nothing broader than this.
Okay.
And Bill, the challenge with just saying, you know, we don't want anything else is you just don't know what it could be, right? So
well, I think Kelly,
just keeping it the way it is the right thing.
Okay. You know,
right,
Kelly.
Right. So I think if we got back, say, something from Legislative Council where they were instructed to draft something that broadens this to, say, emergencies or financial hardship, which is one of the things that has been requested in the original HB 3375 that was drafted. This would then allow Josh to not approve, and we wouldn't go forward with the board's approval because we wouldn't accept that language.
Yeah, I would think if you get any feedback of any openings or broadening of the language, want to at least send something to the board making us aware of it at that time.
We definitely will.
Yeah, and then we can cross that bridge.
Yeah, exactly.
Well, I mean, I think we will, you know, the way these things kind of go is there likely won't be a time to have another meeting. So, I mean, if it's something that's really iffy that we think the board may or may not approve, we could get back together. But the way I'm taking this direction is if this changes anything and kind of something that I would consider to be a scope change for the hardship, then I would take this as the board has not approved that. Because I believe what we're asking for here is basically keeping the hardship at the same scope of the hardship that exists in the current law and only broadening who can request a hardship, not what they can request it for or anything else like that.
Well, the only reason why I'm hesitating is, remember, some of us, mainly me, you know, had been offering up amendments to broaden hardship So in other words, if that was broadened to something like, if somebody passed away, the spouse gets a lump sum.
Well, frankly, I would support that. I don't want to open up Pandora's box here, but that's the whole thing why we just need to say, well, this is what we support, and we'll just cross that bridge.
You might have a lot of, like, hits on existing members of that case. I don't mean to make light of it, but that's still very, very, there's still a lot of older firefighters who, I mean, we just, that's still, it could be, that could be a problem still, Gilbert. You don't see that being a problem, a lump sum?
For if somebody passed away for the surviving spouse, I do not.
I think that have over half a million.
We've already discussed all this. My position's known. I'm happy to talk offline. I don't want to use time here.
I would think it would be very traumatic for someone to lose their spouse. I think it'd be, you know, and you don't know the circumstances about life insurance and other things, so.
Well, that's a subject for another day. We're not debating
that
today.
Right.
I'm a little confused. To your point, Kelly, we're just changing, we're not changing the scope, but we're changing who it applies to, and it's very narrowly, and we're doing this because we don't want to seem, you know, inflexible. I mean,
so you're correct in the fact that we are just changing this to allow every holder of a drop account to that had a drop account before 2017 to be able to request a hardship. But we're doing it because we think it's the right thing to do, not really to appear flexible. I would change that. As far as what Gilbert's talking about and the criteria for the hardship, I think that's in the rulemaking of the board that can be done at another time. But I can say I'm a little bit concerned that it's likely we won't have time to get back and have a meeting with the board to discuss any changes that happen to flow if something gets presented on the floor or from legislative council. So I just want to make
Kelly,
sure
that's, I'm sorry.
We're okay with that.
Yeah, I apologize for interrupting, Kelly, but that's kind of my concern is that these things could happen on the floor at a moment's notice. And by default, we would be in support of that, which we know what effect that would have on our fund. So who do we have that's monitoring that, and are they going to be in contact with us for the day that it makes it to the floor, so that we could be there in the event that we need to educate legislators on the fly so they can hear from the subject matter experts?
So we have our legislative consultants. So you're right, Armando, you're exactly right. And that's why we were hesitant to just open up the bill for this change previously. But so HILCO is there and they're monitoring it all the time. And they're talking to people. I know the city is monitoring it as well. They've alerted all of the Dallas delegation that they're opposed to the bill. They don't like particularly the idea, at least Elizabeth didn't like the idea that we were opening up the bill potentially. Josh and I will be monitoring it. We've got the active associations are down there monitoring it as well. Chairman Anchia knows exactly where we're standing on this, and I think he's supportive of that as well. The PRB will contact me if they see any changes. You can never control what happens on the floor, but I think there's enough people that know kind of where we stand that don't want this pension to fail that I'm not as worried about this as I would be other things, I guess.
I can appreciate that. Thank you.
Josh, do you have anything
Kelly,
to add?
You know the temperature of the board. You know.
Yeah.
So.
Yeah. Okay.
Josh, did you want to add anything?
No, I think Kelly described it accurately.
Okay. If there is nothing else, Does somebody want a motion that we adjourn?
Bill, before you adjourn, let me just let you know that we do have a hand raised to speak to the board.
Okay, good.
All right, I'm unmuting them. Jerry? Guess he didn't want to talk. All right.
Okay, very good. So, can we get a motion to adjourn?
So moved.
Who is that?
Gilbert.
Gilbert, thank you, Gilbert. Do we have a second?
Armando.
Armando, thank you. Anybody opposed? Okay, we are adjourned. Thank you. I appreciate everybody coming on such short notice.